Evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this evening's meeting. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure that their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in committee items. I remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or non-significant non-financial interests which they have in any amount of business before the committee here today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating that item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back in to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. Proceeding of tonight's meetings are there will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. Members should remember that the microphone works as a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have the precedence. Flashing green is next in the queue and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again when it is lit up red or you will lose your place in the queue. There may be some members in the chamber or virtually attending. It has been agreed that all members in the chamber are brought in to speak on any issue before any remote delegates. Therefore, if you are attending remotely, please use the chat facility to indicate you wish to speak, and I will bring members in once with all the chamber have spoken. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments that they make at the meeting. So, nice meeting. Do we have any apologies?
Yes, Chair, we have apologies from Councillors Andrews, Hanlon, Hardy, McGuinness, McAvoy, Rice and Truesdale.
Okay. Any declarations of interest?
Yeah, Councillor Finn has an apology as well, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Any declarations of interest? Councillor Bursey?
Just like people to confirm that there's no memberships of the National Trust here.
Apart from the members of the National Trust, Councillor Bowsey.
I appreciate what Councillor Bowsey is asking, but it is for members to declare their own interests. You know, I do appreciate what you're asking, but.
Members declare any interest on that matter? No? Okay, moving on. So, tonight's meeting, I would like to introduce you to the members of the National Trust who are here in attendance. Thank you very much for accommodating us. So here we have Heather McLaughlin, Director of Operations, Johnny Clark, Assistant Director of Operations, Patrick Lynch, General Manager of South Down Property Portfolio, Victoria McGranahan, External Affairs and Corporate Communications Manager, Roger McKenna, Senior Estates Manager, and Roisin Donnelly, the Project Manager. So we're going to start this evening's meeting with a presentation from the Trust. You guys are ready to go. I'll hand it over.
And thank you very much, Chair. Good evening, everybody. I'm Heather McLaughlin. I'm Country Director. I have responsibility for the operation of National Trust in Northern Ireland. Thank you so much for the invitation to join you tonight. And apologies for my voice. I'm just suffering from allergy, which seems to be going around at the moment. And I'm delighted to be here along with some of my wider team. For those of you who don't know us, National Trust has for over 130 years looked after places of historical and natural beauty for the benefit of the communities that they serve, and in Northern Ireland, obviously, looking after the community here. Our purpose is to protect the places in our stewardship and guardianship so that people and nature thrive now and for the future and for future generations. And in case of Northern Ireland, we look after 1% of the land mass of Northern Ireland and 22% of the coastline. We hope that this evening we'll be able to provide you with a wider understanding of the work that the National Trust does here, and particularly as a conservation charity, the work that we do in the Mourne's area. We also hope that there is a good chance to have a discussion about our decision with regards to the Mourne's Gateway project. I'm going to pass to Jonathan Clark, who is our Assistant Director for Operations, and Patrick Lynch, who is our General Manager for South Down, who have had most involvement with the project over the years as stakeholders that we have operated across the months and years that we've been working with you. So I hope that between them, they'll be able to answer some of the questions that you may have.
Thanks, Heather. Our short presentation this evening will talk you through some of our specific responsibilities and the challenges we face working in the Mourns. We'll also cover our engagement, as Heather says, in the Mourns Gateway project to date and our decision not to grant a lease for Thomas's Quarry. We'll finish up talking about wider partnership working and our roles in building a sustainable future for the Mourns. The National Trust is responsible for managing just over 500 hectares of upland habitat in the Eastern Mourns area of special scientific interest. That's an area slightly smaller than Tullymore Forest Park and around the same size as Newry City's urban area. As part of our charitable purpose, we act as stewards of this place. Access to the mountains is free, and we look after them for the benefit of all. I'm now going to hand over to Patrick Lynch for details of the ecology of the area.
Thank you, Johnny, and good evening, everyone. My name's Patrick Lynch, and I've worked for the National Trust for almost 20 years at Murlock and Mourns. I've had the privilege of taking care of this special place, starting as a ranger in 2006, and now covering the general manager role. At the National Trust, we look after significant parts of Slieve Donard, Slieve Pump, as well as other areas within the Mourn footprint, such as Murlock, Prince Harbour, the upland areas include a variety of priority and internationally important habitats, such as wet and dry heath, blanket bog, and montane heath, which you can see on the map. Since 2019, the Trust has invested over £1 million in repairing the paths and undertaking wildfire recovery work. As you can imagine, 2021's wildfire had a devastating impact on us as a local team and an organisation, a feeling that resonated throughout the wider community. As a charity and a conservation organisation, the National Trust is committed to restoring a healthy, beautiful and natural environment. Our driving principles for the land we care about around the Mourns is to improve the condition of these internationally important habitats. A key responsibility is to restore and protect nature in the Mourns whilst providing sustainable access for the hundreds of thousands of visitors we currently welcome and for future generations. Through our wildfire recovery work, in 2023, across Thomas and Millstone Mountain, which are just behind Thomas Quarry, we located an estimated 21 hectares of deep peat, an important and sensitive habitat and a key carbon store. The condition assessment survey found the habitat to be in unfavourable condition, and our team are working hard to improve its condition through the creation of timber dams and sheep fleece bunds. So whilst it's positive that we have these habitats, it's also important we look after and protect them. The National Trust Donard Nature Recovery Report, NIEA's condition assessments, and the Mourne Strategic Path Review all state that these delicate habitats are under pressure from current visitor numbers, which are contributing to its unfavourable condition. The balance between protecting this fragile habitat whilst providing access is a delicate one which we must get right. Current infrastructure is not sufficient for existing visitor numbers. It is critical that we have the right infrastructure and a plan to manage visitor dispersal to enable us to protect this iconic mountain. And I'll hand back to Johnny to speak about National Trust's engagement with the Mourns Mountain Gateway project.
Thanks, Patrick. Forward, please. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Patrick. As a key stakeholder, we engaged in a spirit of goodwill, given that this is such an important project for the area. We've participated in project discussions since they began in earnest almost a decade ago. Whilst we recognise the Council's broader aims around investment and tourism, we also note a key objective of the Mourns Gateway project was to protect and enhance nature. From the outset and throughout the intervening time period, we consistently voiced our concerns about potential environmental and other impacts. These concerns were put in writing to the Director of Environment, Regeneration and Tourism in July 2017, and we presented to Council in March 2021. That was to councillors as part of the Belfast Regional City Deal. That highlighted a range of concerns. These concerns have consistently focused on the environmental impact of the proposed project and the impact on the local community. Our concerns increased when the project moved from a gateway to the Mourns with a range of potential solutions to an all or nothing gondola option. The Council commissioned RSK report in June of 2022 highlighted some very important areas, notably visitor dispersal and the need for a wider environmental impact of a gondola option. Last year, we signed a Memorandum of Understanding with the Council, as requested by Tourism Northern Ireland. This formalised the sharing of data and other information. The meaning of this document was, we know, discussed in this chamber. The Memorandum of Understanding underlined our mutual interest in preserving, protecting and promoting appropriate access to the Mourns and set out how the Council and National Trust would communicate with each other in relation to the proposed project. It did not commit either the National Trust or the Council to any specific course of action or any decision. In summary, we've never endorsed or supported the proposed solution, and we have been consistent in our written, verbal, formal and informal communications. Our decision not to consider a lease at Thomas's Quarry was made based on the expert information available to us, and it was not taken lightly. We know that the area faces a number of threats and pressures, most notably from grazing, recreation, burning, invasive species, land use changes, nitrogen deposition, and climate change. I don't need to tell this chamber about the devastating impact of the wildfire of April 2021. It did, however, highlight the fragility of the delicate habitats in this area, bringing attention to the need to monitor, maintain, and restore them. As outlined by Patrick, the site has had significant investment through a DERA Challenge Fund, and that is currently through the DERA Environment Fund, to facilitate the recovery of habitats and nature. And that includes a variety of monitoring programmes. It was clear to us that the growing body of evidence, including our Donard Nature Recovery Report, which was supported by the Northern Ireland Environment Agency, that the proposed project in this location risked placing additional pressures on the fragile landscape. This report was a key moment using 4 years worth of evidence. We were also informed by National Trust members and public opinion, which in almost all cases was opposed to the proposed gondola project. We took care to ensure that this was balanced rather than a small number of passionate individuals. We are very clear that any future development in the Mourns needs to truly serve the long-term conservation and sustainable enjoyment of this irreplaceable natural heritage. And this is what led us to our decision regarding the lease for Thomas's Quarry. There is never a perfect time to make a decision. We made this difficult decision in May of this year. If we made it earlier, then we risked having insufficient evidence. If we left it later, we risked wasting time and resource and reducing the options available to the project team to seek alternatives. We believe this was appropriate and in the best interests for all involved. We know that the decision regarding the lease for Thomas's Quarry was disappointing to those who had worked on and championed the proposed project in that location. The Mourns and the wider area of natural beauty is one of our greatest assets in Northern Ireland, and we know that a Mourns Gateway project and its associated funding brings an important opportunity for sustainable tourism to the local community. Alongside the local community, the National Trust would like to see the City Deal funds stay in the Newcastle area. We believe there is an opportunity to develop an adapted Mourns Gateway project that everyone can support and which aligns with sustainable and regenerative tourism principles while also meeting the economic, environmental, cultural and societal needs of the area. This is probably not the forum for detailed options. However, it is clear that there is an appetite to explore a range of broader options, and we look forward to working with Council and all stakeholders on these. Thank you for listening. I understand that there's now the opportunity for questions.
Thank you very much, Johnny. Now, ask for questions coming from any of the elected members here present, and I would remind them just to try and keep them as succinct and as precise as possible so we can get an accurate response. And if you don't mind, Heather, any direct questions we can direct you, and then you can, with your team, you think he's best placed to respond to the questions that are raised. Okay.
Just a quick wee question. Sorry if I have missed it somewhere, but you made reference to a map, and I can't see a map in the documents that we have. Maybe it was up here behind me at the time. Was it a map to show the area that you actually manage?
Yes, it was. And I am conscious that the map was inserted after the slides had been sent to you. It's basically to illustrate the area. It's quite a good sort of 3D map showing the habitats. I think that was slide number 3, if we're able to stick it back up. And certainly very happy to share afterwards and acknowledge yes. That it wasn't in the pack beforehand.
Okay. Yes, that would be great. Just out of curiosity, it'd be good to have that.
Thank you, Councillor O'Hare. Councillor Byrne? Councillor O'Hare? Councillor O'Hare, you're... Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks to the delegation for the presentation. I suppose just from the outset, just to state that I was on the programme board for the Mourne Mountain Gateway project. So I've got a few questions that come from my participation in the programme board. I just, from the outset, and I think I speak for all members on the programme board, that we went through a process, a very, very long process over many, many years. I'm on the City Deal panel since 2016, over a number of projects, including the Mourne Mountain Gateway project, which preceded 2017. And I know you're saying that's the start point. That was the start point that it entered the City Deal framework. But before that, I know there were study visits done in Derbyshire and England. There was many stakeholders involved, including yourself, in the Mourne Gateway project. So it's been well before the time that I was in council, and I just want to put that on record. But once it went through the City Deal framework and we set up the programme board, it was how we worked together respectfully in order to come to a point where us councillors and the broader council could make an informed decision with the evidence that's in front of us. And the frustration that I have with this process and the question that I would like answered from yourselves is, and you've stated, Johnny, in your letter that went out when you made the decision to pull out of the lease, not to grant the lease, there was never an entrance into the lease in the first place. But you've stated again tonight that those who championed the project would be disappointed. I don't see any councillor that was across the chamber that was championing the project as in had made the decision on the project. Every single councillor. It was so frustrating. We're waiting for the reports, we're waiting for the public engagement sessions, had advanced it to a point that we had the information that we could make an informed decision. Because otherwise, we're not experts. This is not our field of expertise. So I can't, as a councillor, stick my finger in the air and say, personally, I'm for or against this. I want to see the evidence base. So we went to the public engagements. We listened to the people. And we know there was a lot of opposition to the project as well. We know those environmental concerns. And that's why we had asked for an environmental impact assessment. But that was on the basis of the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding that was signed between yourselves and the council. We were always under... it was our interpretation of that, and from questions through the programme board, that the environmental impact assessment, when it was brought back, that would be additional information for us to make our decision. And also, on the MOU, that it would enter discussions with yourselves, it would release. We were not aware that an environmental assessment, generally, of the Mourns, which was being compiled by yourselves, was going to be the only document where a decision would be made before our EIA was out. So that was disappointing. So how, going forward, having an MOU with yourselves and the council, I find it very difficult to trust what was in the MOU. And I know it's not legally binding, but it's a gentleman's agreement of how we'll operate. How do we trust going forward, even on alternative projects, that there will be respect on both sides? Because this then turned into a political football, in my view. Not putting words in anybody's mouths, but it turned into a political football in where we had parties that were out that were for something, and parties that were against it. And that simply wasn't the case. I can't stress that enough. It was, we moved it to a point to get that information. The pivotal point of this is to move it to get that information for us to make an informed decision on whether to go for it or go against it. Cost money. Cost the ratepayer money. So we moved that environmental impact assessment. And obviously in the trust, you're aware that we were doing that. Why not wait until that report was back, which was a matter of weeks, what, 8 weeks or something, we were told at the last programme board meeting, and that we could have all the information and that we could look at it holistically and come to a decision. And I respect that if a decision then at that point is still that the lease isn't granted, probably maybe a decision of councillors as well when we had the information in front of us. We didn't have that benefit. And as a member of the programme board, the last point that I want to get clarity on in the MOU, it started off about talking about good faith, and you said it in your presentation there, that we would operate in good faith, we would respect each other. We didn't hear, we heard of the decision when it hit the news at 9:20 or 9:30 that morning. There was absolutely no time to notify the councillors on the programme board, to notify them why the decision was taken. And I felt frustrated because that report that you're referring to in the Mourns report, and I read through it, why was that not tabled at the stakeholders group of the programme board and saying this is the evidence base that we have, and this is why we're not going to enter a lease. And let us go through it respectfully and make a decision at the programme board. Or why not wait for the council's EIA? Was it a decision to go because maybe it was getting too... And it was all over the news. It was difficult for everybody. And people were saying that, you know, parties had these positions, parties... And it was difficult to manage. But it was frustrating for us. So I'd ask to put yourselves in my shoes on the programme board. I am sitting here doing the right thing by the ratepayer, waiting for the information to make an informed decision. Before I get that information, press release. And everyone's blaming political parties for ratepayers' money being spent. I think the MOU was not respected on both sides in terms of communication, putting out those statements without coming to the council. And I know the council, maybe came to the council half an hour beforehand, but I'm not talking about the chief executive, I'm talking about the decision makers of the council. We had the programme board in order to do that. Pulling out of the stakeholders forum, we need to engage. We know that there is damage in terms of footfall across the Mourns. I'm an avid hill walker. I'm currently on the 32nd peak of 32 peak challenge across Ireland, so I absolutely love the mountains. So I understand where you're coming from that. But I mean, we need to, through the stakeholders forum, through that board, engage with each other. And I felt we just went like this. And it was nearly a blame game. And that's the frustration. So when you're talking about, you know, alternate projects, absolutely, I'd love to keep the 30 million in this district and work on something that we can mutually agree on. But I don't have that trust in order to do it because of the process that we went through. So there has to be respect on both sides. I think the decision should have come through council and we should have been informed. We were waiting for the information. And why was it put out at the date that it was put out before the EIA from the council was finalised?
Okay, thank you, Councillor Byrne. Heather?
Thank you. There's a lot in that. So if I can try and do it in some sort of order. Yes, completely get that. Pre-2017, there was lots. And again, both Patrick and I worked on some earlier options. At that stage, we were looking at the broader area, including Bloody Bridge, Murlop Nature Reserve, et cetera. So yes, that does predate some of the information. But it, as you quite rightly say, when the city deal funding came in, it sort of went through a more formalised process. The first thing I'd like to say is I share your frustration. I hear you. It is an incredibly complex project. It inevitably is. As indeed all those city deal projects are. So yes, there have been frustrations on both sides, and some of the communication, and I'm happy to say on both sides as well. You asked specifically about the environmental impact assessment and why didn't we wait? And I suppose it's as I said, we had to go with the information we had. We'd found some aspects frustrating in that we weren't quite sure when various reports were happening, etc. And that's one of the reasons we highlighted that RSK report. We had significant input to that report in 2022, and I think that report really highlighted. Hopefully to the project board, some of the absolutely key risks to the future of that project, and it really laboured the point on the environmental issues. So and that was back in 2022. So that was done in close collaboration with us and our various experts. So there are a number of key moments. That was one of them. And I think the other was the report, as you say, the Dunnard Wildfire Recovery Report. That was significant. It's significant because for many reasons, but we were using government money. You know, that was DERA money that we had got from an environment fund. In order to measure and help protect and help restore that area, so that had significance in its own right, and it also had significance because it was a key part of the project governance around spending that government money. So that probably represents for us in terms of information with which to make an informed decision that. Represented for us a tipping point, if you like, in terms of here we have 4 years worth of evidence specifically looking at environment and ecology issues with which we then considered we had the information available in order to make that informed decision. And I do acknowledge that, as I said in the presentation, there's not a perfect time to make a decision. We could wait 3 months, 6 months, and the danger is with some of these reports, and you'll have seen that as part of a project board, you get a report that recommends producing another report with a little bit more detail. So that's why we chose that moment in terms of when we made a decision.
Okay. Thank you, Johnny. Mr. Byrne, you look back in.
Yeah, just a question to come back on that. And obviously sticking to the reason why I'm asking the questions, I'm a decision maker and I want the information for making the decision. It's not about, you know, what position you take on a project, because we didn't get to that point. I'll make that very, very clear. At no point was the EIA from the council, was it discussed with council officers on waiting for that to have the totality of the reports. You talked about the RSK report from 2022. And obviously that fed into largely, you know, part of your decision making, but we still signed the MOU in 2024, which is 2 years later. And the MOU stated in 5.4 if the conservation impact has been assessed. So there was further assessment going on with the conservation impact. The council, as you rightly stated in the Donald Wildfires report, that was DARA money, it was government money, respect that, but also was the City Deal money. We had drawn down public money, ratepayers money, in order to have an AIEA report done, which was commissioned months earlier. So obviously you were aware of that. And the frustration for somebody as a decision maker waiting for that is, A, I didn't even have the time after the Donald report, because I think it was commissioned or published in April 2025 when I had seen it. And that statement went out, within a week after that report. So there was no programme board to sit to even go through that report. It was, the report was published before even engaging and discussing it with the council, which is through the MOU good communication. We didn't hear, we seen a statement just out the next morning. So was there any discussions from the Donner report was published in April 2025 with the council? Was there any disagreement on waiting on the EIA? And did the council know then that you were going to pull out of the project before the programme board knew? So that's my frustration. And I would ask you again, just put it through the lens that if you put yourself in my shoes, and we could have the same opinion, we could have the same opinion if we switch places, but put yourself in my shoes. And I'm telling the public, and I went to the public consultation in Newcastle, and I told the public that I and my party will make a decision based on the information in front of us because I'm not an expert. We didn't get to that point. We just got, because it was getting too hot maybe to handle, we got the press going out, and then there's blame going left, right and centre. So it's that trust issue. I'd like to know, was there a discussion around the EIA and following the Donner report to release your decision publicly very, very quickly afterwards without any communication with us in the council?
Okay, Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, I'm going to pass to Roger.
I would just say that, I mean, the MOU was really designed to be around communication to avoid, you know, sort of issues to, like this to a certain extent. 3.5 in the MOU requires the National Trust to respond within 48 hours of actually coming to the conclusion that, you know, the scheme couldn't go ahead. And it was the outcome of the Donard report that really crystallised internally that actually the mountain wasn't capable of really, you know, the risk was to the footfall that was on it at that point in time, never mind the additional footfall that would come. So as soon as that decision was made inside of the trust, we were then obligated to communicate that within 48 hours.
Roger. Councillor Bowsey.
Firstly, thank you for coming. I speak as someone who cares about the environment, have done from a young age, and largely due to my exposure to places like the Llewellyn Gardens and Castle Ward, but I'm also a pragmatist. You know, environment has to be balanced with livelihoods. Most of you probably came here by car, probably didn't car share, but in balance you thought it's worth coming along to talk about the environment in the mornings. And likewise, here was an opportunity to invest 30 million/44 into Newcastle and showcase the mornings and its environment in a controlled manner. There's commendable work in the Mourns Recovery Report, but there's no direct link in it that says categorically it would be undermined by a gondola. In fact, arguably, a carefully designed project could have managed visitors better. That's why, as Councillor Byrne said, it's important that we waited for the evidence via an EIA. Your own statement recently says concerns about the impact on the environment, but you didn't wait for the EIA to verify your concerns. And then reading through the MOU, it states the National Trust and the Council agree to seek constructive solutions to any problems or disputes that may arise between them and to resolve them amicably and promptly. So do you think that giving the Council 20 minutes notice before announcing to the world you would be pulling the plug on the gondola was acting amicably to find a solution? My second question, what aspect of the MOU did the council not honour? My question for the CEO, the National Trust have just stated they're looking forward to continuing to work with the council. Do you think that is possible given their actions?
I Maybe Councillor Bowsey, can you just confirm as to which CEO you're referring that question to?
The CEO of the council.
Thank you, Councillor Bowsey. Heather, bring you in first.
Thank you for that. So likewise, I share deep concern about, you know, and Keen Mountain Walker. And one of the things in the decision making was actually some work that we'd also done separate to the project itself, which is a book I have here, which is the output of that, which is funded through Levelling Up Funds, which looked at a number of the issues in the mountainscape. So not just Donard, but beyond that. And in this, there's a clear guidance in terms of if you are to put more people into the mountainscape, the infrastructure is just not there. So there's a complete analysis of the path network of the Higher Mourns, which is at the moment in what would be flashing red status and cannot take any more impact. So that was one of the issues in terms of additional information that was there and getting people into the mountain. So that was one. In terms of the MOU, it was about having communication with the council. And again, I think Councillor Byrne said it had gone quiet. There was certainly some times where we'd asked for information that we didn't have, that would have been really helpful to us just to understand even the nature of the project and what the project in terms of the numbers coming to the mountains and that the gondola project would bring. So that had caused us some issues in terms of being able to actually understand where the project was at, how it had been developed. And obviously we weren't on the project board, so we didn't know the details of the whole project. And therefore that became really difficult for us to understand what the increased numbers might be to the mountainscape and therefore the impact on the wider infrastructure. As I say, we already were very well aware there were issues with.
You mentioned about the programme board. Do you think...
Sorry, Councillor Bowsey, can I just let...
Sure, but just could bring Connor in first just to clarify regarding the information provided to the National Trust. But I would also say, you know, as a council and a local authority, we have within our corporate plan deep interest in the local environment, the Mourns themselves, indeed Bullion as well, and all of our mountain ranges and parks and areas that we work in. We've always had that a deep interest. We are particularly interested in tourism as well as a council. It's been part of our corporate plan objective since 2015. And that's around, and I think Councillor Boise rightly refers to it, it's about stimulating the local economy and providing jobs. We would never do that at the detriment of the local environment, and that's the purpose of like environmental impact assessments, etc. Whereas I think Councillor Boise asked me, would the council work with the National Trust moving forward? We will continue to work with all bodies. That's what we do. That's what we do as a council. I think that this has been a very challenging process. I think that we did have a very, very limited window of time to inform councillors, which put me in a very difficult position. But I think sometimes in life you say we have to move on. We have to look at the greater, I suppose my drive as chief executive is to look at the greater interests of council area and work with you as councillors in how we deliver and develop. And we are doing work, as everybody knows, on the Belfast Region City Deal and how we try to secure that funding. So that's work that will...
Right, Chair, just to add around the information that has been shared throughout the project, both the strategic outline case and the severity and probably an excess of over 40 different pieces of correspondence had been shared with the National Trust over a period of time, including the outline business case executive summary, same OBC executive summary that was tabled and approved and agreed by councillors through the council's governance structure, which would have set out the high level objectives and benefits of the project, which would have included projected visitor numbers, and I think the visitor numbers were well known both within the council structures and publicly. So that information was shared. Any information that we were in the position to share with the National Trust that wasn't of a confidential or a commercial nature, we shared with the National Trust. And I think the MOU set that out clear, that we would share information where possible. But in some circumstances, it's not possible to share commercial information that is deemed confidential and not for sharing in the public. So I just thought it was important that we shared that information.
Thank you, Connor. Councillor Bisey.
I still don't think there's a clear answer as to why an EIA that the National Trust wanted, as did the Alliance Party, but then pulled the plug on the gondola before you get the evidence. It's shameful. You talk about you weren't on the programme board as if you were kept off it. You were invited onto it and chose not to go on to it. The question there is, on hindsight, do you think you should have joined that?
Thank you. So your second point, programme board, that would be a conflict of interest in fairly basic terms if we, as the owner of that key site that we are looking after in perpetuity, were on a board that is making decisions about the future use. So that wasn't made lightly or because we took our toys away. That was because there was a clear conflict of interest. And you also said about working together, just to emphasise that there are lots of other areas where National Trust and Council work exceptionally well together. The blue flag status, as a simple example, blue flag status at Murlough Beach would not be possible were it not for Council and National Trust working effectively together. So whether it's Geopark, broader issues, we work well with this council and indeed others throughout Northern Ireland.
Heather?
Yeah, and just to come in on the EIA, we did not know what the scope was of the EIA, and one of the issues was whether the EIA would be covering the whole of the mountainscape or would just be on the gondola footprint. And therefore, because we knew we had the evidence that we needed in order to be able to make a decision for the mountains and that fragile habitat, we were able to make that decision at that point. I would also add to what Johnny had said in terms of working with council. We work with council not only in Murlough but in a number of other projects, and currently have a bid with council for 12.4 million coming into the Mourne and Gullion area with NLHF if that is successful. So there are definite areas that we work hand in hand, hand in glove. And we're also very supportive of the NLHF bid, which is being developed for Strangford and Lochiel.
Thank you, Heather. Any more questions from the floor? Mr. McAteer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, thanks, folks, for coming along this evening. I think it's quite useful. But unfortunately, the more I hear, the more concerned I get from what I'm hearing from yourselves, really, because the depth of inconsistencies pile up. But anyhow, I'll start with a few of the questions. Just the very first one struck me was, you know, the suddenness of this. I wasn't involved in stakeholder groups, working groups, or anything. So I was sitting as an outside councillor. I suppose that's probably why I'm an outsider looking in a sense. That I'm probably so angry about this, I'm disappointed in your behaviour. But something struck me was that, you know, there was quite a momentum that time of public. Certainly public discussion on social media primarily around this. So did you panic? You as a board actually panic in this sense? And did you succumb to political pressure? That's the first question I answered here. You also mentioned concern for public funds. So was this concern expressed during the different, whether it was stakeholder meetings or the joint working group meetings that you attended with the council. So did you raise these concerns for public, the spending of public funds, which I presume was the gondola aspect to the scheme? And I would also be interested to hear what your responsibilities are in terms of a project like this and a decision that the council would be making, bring a particular project on in terms of public funding. So I'm asking really, in your statement of May, what did the spending, your concern of public funds actually relate to? And did it extend, knowing that the council at your certainly input that the EIA report that was commissioned, did you know that public money was to be spent on that? And can you now see that you've wasted public money, not having the decency and manners to wait until that report was completed and addressed to you in its appropriate way? Also, would you share with us the internal records of your decision making prior to your statement, May 25? I've added some of this, Johnny, tonight, in a little favour, but I think we'd be very interested to hear how you actually sat down, what circumstances you sat down, make what we would deem and view as a very rushed decision. And finally, would you agree that the integrity of the National Trust has suffered immensely due to your unreliable behaviour dealing with us as a local authority? Yeah, sure, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McAteer.
Thank you. I think I'd like to say I found some of the language you used to be unhelpful in a forum like this this evening. I'd just like to register that we've been invited here, and I think some of the terms used could almost be pejorative in nature, which as I say, I don't think is helpful. But I will answer as many of your points as possible. You asked first about inconsistency. We have been absolutely consistent in formal communications from 2017 to now. Absolutely consistent in our concerns. And sometimes those were concerns where we didn't have all the evidence, but we were raising environmental concerns. And then when we did have the evidence, we used that evidence very, very clearly. We'd tried to talk through some of those key bits, and indeed some of the clear evidence in some of the council's own reports. And it's not just National Trust reports. This is the Northern Ireland Environment Agency, Department of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs. So there are reports consistently throughout this period. You said the word panic. No, we don't panic. Political pressure, we don't do that either. We do listen to our National Trust members. We've got just short of 100,000 National Trust members in Northern Ireland. That's more members than all of the political parties in Northern Ireland put together. So we listen to our National Trust members because we're a membership organisation. So I said some of those points in my presentation. And we listen and make sure it's balanced. You asked about a decision-making process. I'm not in a position to go through our internal decision-making process. But can we stand over our decision-making process? Yes, we can. Was a decision made based on the best possible evidence we have? Yes, it was. Could we have waited? Yes, we could have waited, but we don't believe it would have helped. So we made that decision. We made it very clear. And as country director, as operations director, I stand over those decisions. So I think the other bit that you mentioned was integrity of the National Trust. I don't see any issues at all with that. National Trust members, I'm sure, will raise with us if they have any particular concerns. But am I content with how we have behaved consistently throughout this process and the integrity with which we have acted? Yes, I am. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Johnny. Just 2 seconds, Councillor Chair, just to remind each other that we just be courteous and respectful to one another when we're asking questions. So just courteous and respectful to one another so we don't have any miscommunication. Not enough of that so far in this project. Mr. McIntyre, you're looking back.
I just missed out one. Was the public fund. How you felt about that? Your statement in May 25 expressed your concern about public funds, the spending of public money. As I said, you knew we spent spending money waiting on an EIA report, which you said you thought it wasn't worth waiting on. So how did that reflect the concern for spending public money?
Again, that same clause, 3.5 of the MOU, says the National Trust effectively to respond within 48 hours of the decision to ensure and safeguard any future expenditure. Is a requirement?
Okay, thank you, Roger. Councillor Riley, you're looking in online.
Yeah, thanks, Chairman. Chairman, I'm just a bit perplexed, you know, to suggest that Councillor McAteer's line of question represents pejorative attitude. I think that's disgusting. And I think it maybe it's quite an explanation of why we're in this situation with the National Trust. You know, if you can't come here, if you can't come to a council meeting, you've got 100,000 members. We've got 40 elected members who put themselves open to the public, and they put their one or two or three at our names, and we're accountable to them. Who are you accountable to? 100,000 members in Northern Ireland. I came here with an open mind tonight, but having heard the dismissive attitude of the National Trust, I think you're a disgrace. I have to say that. If you look at that memorandum of understanding, any reasonable person that was signed in 2024. Any reasonable person would almost think that was a declaration of intent to proceed. And then whatever made you change your mind messed this council about terribly. Potential loss of £30 million that could have been invested for the good of this area, the good of the Mourne Mountains, an opportunity to explain to the general public how important the Mourne Mountains are to the entire British Isles, if you want to have a big overview of it. But certainly I'm very, very disappointed that a councillor's very mild comments would be considered pejorative. I think you should actually retract that statement from the National Trust, because you can't come to a democratically elected assembly like Newry, Mourne and Down District Council and throw out statements like that. It's very, very unfair and very unsettling for anybody who puts themselves before the electorate. We have to represent our people. And it's just beyond belief that the way the National Trust has behaved in this whole thing towards the council. You couldn't even wait until the appropriate study was brought to council and presented to yourselves. So I'm just at a loss to understand. In fact, I think the council should take nothing more to do with the National Trust, because if I'll leave it at that, Chairman, but I'm just absolutely disgusted with what the way I've heard tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Jackson.
Thank you.
Go Councillor Enright, and Mr. Jackson's absence, would you like to propose a question?
Thanks, Chairperson. Can you hear me? My camera doesn't seem to be working.
Yes, we can hear you, Councillor Enright.
I'm just picking up on what Councillor Riley said. At the Finance Committee, I made a point of reading out the Memorandum of Understanding, which made crystal clear to those that were misrepresenting it as a agreement to proceed, that it was actually a very cautious statement, which made it quite clear that the National Trust were not signed up to the project. I also attempted to get the lack of the landowners' consent on the risk assessment for the project, and I must say the entire risk assessment and the failure to control this project from a governance and fiduciary point of view squarely falls upon the council managers and for parties that have a majority on the Finance Committee. I totally contradict Councillor Riley, because I actually read out the Memorandum of Understanding into the minutes so that I could contradict people who were representing it falsely as an agreement to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Enright. Marie, you'd like to come in on that?
Just to correct, Councillor Enright, at no point did any member of the senior management team of Newry Morne and Down Council represent the Memorandum of Understanding as an agreement for the National Trust to proceed. I think all parties here tonight have been very, very clear that it was a Memorandum of Understanding around communication, working on the project and working together. So I think that's very clear to say that's a misrepresentation from Councillor Enright. And I think it's been very clearly communicated by the National Trust that that was what the Memorandum of Understanding said. It's been very clear by our elected members who have come in here tonight, and I'm reiterating that again, that it was not and never was portrayed as an agreement to proceed. It was always a basis on which we would work together, and then whatever happened after that happened.
Thank you, Marie. Okay, any more questions? Okay, folks, any more questions from the floor? No, that's a yes then. Wisey?
Lastly, I would say that the MOU, very bottom, it says, well, my question is the MOU basically still in effect, or does it expire after 5 years with mutual written consent of both parties, as stated at the bottom of the MOU? Out the window, because the project's out the window.
As this related to the project, we would not consider this MOU to be relevant now in working with anything that we do with the National Trust would be considered different arrangements.
Thanks for clarifying. But just, it does say that it would expire after 5 years with the consent of both parties, written consent to both parties. Both parties didn't give written consent to this MOU. So how is that living up to the MOU once again?
Roger.
The MOU, of course, it's a non-legally binding document, just there in terms of communication on the project. The research and the reports that were gathered over 4 years after the Donard report produced enough evidence to, you know, be able to say quite clearly the mountain can't tolerate the, you know, the impact of a scheme. Because the National Trust has come to the decision that we couldn't proceed with that. We were obligated to communicate that quickly. But because we can't go ahead with it, this document effectively is just as Marie has said, it's null and void at this point.
Councillor Boisey's point, it's not that the council bowed out of the MOU or signed anything to say the position we find ourselves today is that by default we're no longer part of it.
Thank you very much, Marie. Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just one brief comment, maybe to finish on a positive note. We talked about alternate projects going forward, and obviously across vast number of projects, we work in the council and the councillors, with yourselves and the National Trust, and I would hope going forward that it would be obviously positive engagement and productive. But could I ask that we learn lessons from this? And I won't apologise for making the same point. We're sitting in the firing line. of misinformation going out there. If I had known the level of information that is stated tonight that you didn't say you had, we would have been a lot more informed. And I'll give you an example of that. To hear Heather yourself tonight saying you didn't know the scope of the EIA, I find absolutely astonishing. I didn't know that. Now, did you articulate that to the council officers through the joint working groups that you didn't know the scope of an environmental impact assessment in which we were spending ratepayers' money and I was going to public meetings telling them we were waiting for the outcome of that? So I find that astonishing. So it looks like communication had broken down earlier than we realised as councillors. We're sitting judicially waiting for reports to come through and then the pins pulled before they come, and we weren't aware that the miscommunication, that you didn't even know the scope of the report that we were waiting on. So that has to be fixed going forward. And just to the other point on 3.5 that has been brought up by yourself. Sorry, I didn't get your first name. Roger, a couple of times. I respect that. I respect that when you make a decision, you have 48 hours to inform the council. I totally respect that. It's in the MOU. And unlike Councillor Enright, I know it's not legally binding. I knew it was a mutual way of going forward in terms of communication. But Johnny had stated a few minutes before, yes, we could have waited for the EIA, but you'd made your decision. And when you make your decision, you have to inform us within 48 hours. That's the difference. It's that you felt that it was the right time then to make a decision. And that's ratepayers' money, which was spent on a report, same ratepayers' money that was spent on the Dairy report for the Donard one. This should have been given. All that information should have been brought back to us. And the final thing I'll say going forward for alternative projects is when we're waiting for information reports, whether it's from yourself or from the council, I expect as a council and the programme board with a decision-making powers to have those reports in front of me before decisions made and throws us into the limelight and under the bus. I found that wholly unprofessional. And I think you'd feel the same if you were in our shoes. So the Donald report should have been tabled with us at the programme board. Your decision could have been given to us. So we were aware of it, where the EIA was stopped, and then the project was dead. We found out in the press. And we need to fix that going forward. So if we're going to have a positive relationship going forward, let's engage with each other to the spirit of the MOU. But I hope we can leave this behind us and we can move forward more positively.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. And Donna, you want to come in to address a few points there, I guess?
And just in response to your comment, Councillor Byrne, in respect of the scoping of the EIA, there's probably some evidence from meetings that took place as recently as December 24, under the MOU and the joint working group that was established. And the environmental elements of the project were discussed in detail at that meeting, and members of the National Trust were in attendance. And there was even a section that was specific to the EIA preparation, and an update was provided around the scoping exercise, and setting out further meetings that had to be undertaken through statutory consultees, etc., to finalise the overall scoping for the entire EIA. So information was communicated and it was available around the scope. It even listed 9-10 different types of surveys that were ongoing or planned be carried out to inform the EIA. So I thought it was important that you sort of clarified that point around the information that was shared around the EIA and the scope and what the EIA would cover. Also, some updates around a HRI that was ongoing at the same time by our consultants as well. And probably just to finally conclude, and all reports that we received, as you know, that's been on a programme board, are all brought through the programme board, through the project board, and up to the programme board for information, so members are advised. And just one last thing, just to respond to Councillor Enright's comment around the risk register and that Land Assembly was not on the risk register. Land Assembly was included on the risk register that was developed and presented to the programme board members by our consultant team once they were appointed. So, and it was considered a high risk.
Thank you. Thank you, Connor. Heather, you'd like to come in on that?
Yes, it's just on the matter of the EIA, just to be really clear. We wrote to the council being very clear about what we would expect to see within the scope of the EIA, but we could not be party to the development of the EIA because we were not clear about the details of the project, and therefore we could not give full information as to what we would expect to see, and that included whether the EIA would cover the scope of the mountains or just for the Gondola station and where it was going to be in relation to Thomas's Quarry. So it was a communication piece, and it was just, we were really clear that there would be some requirements. So on file is a letter from us being really clear what we would expect to see, but we could not make it, we couldn't go into detail because we didn't have details of the project in order to make that fit purpose for an year.
Chair, just on that, that raises a really, really important question then, if we can follow up. But that, at that point, if you're with the council, what you expect to see in the EIA, that you wanted to see, what you expected to see, we're waiting for the EIA, then none of us have seen it now because it didn't happen. No, we didn't get it. So that decision, how do you go from expecting to see something in the EIA to write to the council to ask them for that, to just making the decision and disregarding the EIA, which was ratepayers' money spent? And this is the difficulty we have. We've explained to ratepayers the spend of that money and the reasons why we've done it. And to be extremely brief, the reasons why we signed off on the ICT team or whatever the team to go and do those studies is because they were in the MOU asking for conservation reports. So, and I understand it doesn't state conservation reports from the council. It could be from yourselves. I understand that. But we're following the MOU. So how do you go from expecting to see something in the EIA to disregarding the EIA completely?
Okay.
I think the key point around why we moved.
Sorry, can I just for a second here?
Victoria. The key point around why we moved into not deeming it a good idea to wait on the final EIA report was that we had new information through our own commissioned report that told us that the fragility of the habitat was as such that we could not accept any additional pressures put on the mountain and its habitats. So it was new information for us, and we were sharing that and putting that into the public domain. So it really, we knew that when it came to an EIA, we weren't going to be able to accept us playing a role in a project that would place so much extra pressure, potential extra pressure, on the already very fragile environment. And if you think about the context of the report that we produced, it was actually to help us in planning our recovery work, and it was about understanding the recovery of the habitats and the work that we were doing. So on one hand, we're there trying to recover the wider habitats of the mountain, and on the other hand, considering whether or not an EIA might allow us to grant the lease. So we were put in a very awkward position, and on balance, we made the decision that actually we can't accept any further pressures on the fragile habitat.
Okay, Chair, and I need
1 second, Councillor Byrne. Can we keep it to the point?
To one sentence, just on the back of that. I just want to put on record that's unilaterally moving forward. We asked through the MOU for the respect to let us know that as programme board members, and we didn't get that. So if you made that decision and we weren't going forward with our EIA, at least communicate that to us and allow us to have that information before it went public. And I think that's something we need to do.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. Councillor Clark, you have a comment to make?
Thanks, Chair. My camera's not working either, Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank Heather and her team for their presentation. It was informative. Just in regards to, I have a great love for the Mourns as well, and a great passion for the Mourns. I've worked most of my adult life working in the Mourns, the High Mourns. I previously worked with the National Trust footpath team in the 90s. And now I work with the Mourne Heritage Trust path team in the Mourns and Gullion. Just to say, as Councillor Byrne, he's outlined the frustrations of the project board. We were waiting, it's been said, as we're waiting for the report from the environmental impact assessment. We needed that expert advice, to make an informed decision. The way we were informed, I have to agree, wasn't acceptable. Like, we only had 20 minutes. I think it was a Friday that it was going to go live in around 9 o'clock or something. The National Trust, in my opinion, should have requested a meeting with the project board. We could have discussed it in private, your concerns, and before you issued your statement, I think that would have been a useful exercise. In regards to the environmental impact assessment, the council were waiting for that to look at how we mitigate probably some of the issues that you had concerns about, and you outlined in regards to the Thomas Quarry, the visitors, you know, could have caused trampling, erosion, you know, to sensitive sites above the quarry. And I agree with that. You wouldn't want people trampling about above the quarry because, you know, it is a peatland and it is being restored by yourselves. And I want to commend you for that work. But I think, you know, we could have managed the visitors that was going to the site. And I think that was the key that, you know, the council project board was waiting on. You know, how did we look after the visitors coming up? You know, so I think that was, in my opinion, was a mistake. I know you say 48 hours, but we could have pulled the project board together pretty quickly to discuss your issues. I suppose moving forward, it's difficult to, you know, to get an alternative project, you know, that satisfies the criteria of the city deal. You know, there was a number, you know, false narrative, you know, or narratives portrayed by a number of councillors that the money could be used for, you know, any sort of project within our area, like the Newcastle Leisure Centre, the new leisure centre, public outdoor baths, like the Warren Point Baths and the Rock Pool. It could be used for that. And particularly the Lions Party, I have to say, whipped up the public through the false information. It was particularly in social media and through the press, which brought, which I'm sure brought pressure. I think Johnny talked about it, which brought pressure, you know, on your organisation's membership. To, you know, they were pressurising you as an organisation. So I understand that difficulty with your membership are coming back when they've been whipped up, that they're putting pressure on you as an organisation. But just in regards to, as I said, moving forward, a project we all could agree on, a number of turns, you know, they've already been rejected. I put a couple of proposals myself, one for Donald Forest and one for our coastal path from Newcastle to Warren Point and restoring the two public baths I already outlined. And they were all rejected. You know, they'd be good for domestic sort of tourism, but they wouldn't be useful for, you know, overseas visitors. So I suppose then I disagree with Councillor O'Reilly, you know, that we should not do the Nice Trust. Nice Trust do great work, you know, preserving habitats and heritage. So I think the council and National Trust continue need to work together, along with, you know, other organisations like the Forest Service, you know, to manage the moorings, but to manage the Donard Forest also, you know, because of what happened in regards to the project falling, we don't have a management resource to manage Donald Forest, you know, so we do need to, you know, come together and discuss projects that we have in mind and to see if we can get the alternative that we can all agree to. I have a proposal myself which may have an impact on the moorings as well, and I would like to meet up with the National Trust to have a discussion to see if we can come to some sort of agreement, even to look at the proposal I'm putting forward, see if we can discuss it further. But thanks for coming along tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. Councillor Devlin, can I remind councillors just we keep it the questions, commentary, just conscious that the National Trust has taken the effort to be here this evening, so right to the point and quite succinct. Thank you. Councillor Devlin.
Thank you, Chair. And just sort of a couple of points to make. It's nice to see the National Trust here, and it was my proposal coming out of the programme board to have you here this evening. I know the summer's been busy, so I really do appreciate your time and to get the information from you as we're sitting here today. And I don't want to echo a lot of the comments that have been made or go down the path that maybe some other councillors have gone down. We want this to be as constructive as possible. I think it was maybe Victoria had mentioned sort of visitor management and the pressures that are out there, and the decision that was taken, obviously, with the evidence that you already have. We all know only too well, I suppose I'm speaking to the convertible with yourselves in terms of the damage that unfortunately has been done around Dawn and Ott and the issues that we're having there, where that really high footfall is damaging the environment. And I suppose the wider environmental impact assessment we had expected to see in that whole process. You know, if, for example, there was a visitor centre and the footfall was maybe funneled through a more protected way, that actually would have had a benefit in the other areas and took some of the footfall away. But none of that, I think, has been considered in the decisions really been taken so far. And I know as a programme board, we thought that all of those matters would be explored and that the decision of whether to proceed or not could be evidence-based, as Pete has said there very, very quickly. But it seems just the decision was taken in the absence of that evidence that the National Trust have been feeding into, that we've been waiting for, and equally as well that the public funds were paying for. So it is just disappointing that we are where we are, but we don't want this evening to be sort of all negative. We want to be moving forward very, very positively. I think all councillors in this chamber and beyond very much care for the Moors and want to see a positive positive goings on there, and we just hope we can work together more positive in the future. But I suppose in terms of communication, there have been issues to date. Let's just hope that we can move forward from them, Chair. So not really any direct question as such, Chair. I think all the questions have been covered off, mainly just a couple of comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Devlin. We received a message from a question from Councillor Jackson online. If you read it out, just so you think the responses have already been given, but just for the record anyway, sir. Councillor Jackson was asking as to why the National Trust, the reasons that they couldn't take additional people walking in the quarry site, as it was meant to contain people at a visitor centre. So we just message to why made the decision that you couldn't accommodate additional walkers in the area. That's what he's meant to say.
So I'll clarify. The concerns are that gondola would attract more people to the Mourns. And here was a proposal that keeps people on a gondola up to a site where they wouldn't be allowed to wander into the Mourns. If there's commentary around that, it would lead to chaotic scenes of people jumping into the Mourns when that's what the project was meant to try to tackle.
Thank you, Councillor Buzzy.
So what I would say is it wasn't clear, you know, whether it was in terms of the project where we were going to, how many people would end up leaving the gondola or not leaving the gondola, whether it was going to be a closed gondola or whether it was going to be open gondola. That was information we didn't have. And we know from the work that we've done that the footfall that's already occurring in that area is higher than the habitat can take.
The officers can correct me if I'm wrong, but unless I only knew this through closed session, but I was well aware that visitors were taken up to the top and they weren't allowed to wander into the Mourn. So perhaps the officers can clarify if that was made public to both public and to the National Trust.
Connor, you'd like to come in on that?
Yeah, just with respect to the visitor, there was a visitor management plan being developed for the project. And this was part and parcel of the agenda of the working group that was established under the MOU. And that visitor management plan was considering all the feedback that we had received, both through the public consultation events, where there was concerns that this was, quote, a term, a taxi halfway up Donard, where people would be allowed to roam freely once they got to the visitor centre. I think at one stage we got to the point where we said that it would have to be managed through the visitor management plan. And the sort of the approach that was being adopted was, and I think it was communicated widely, that it would be managed access out onto the mountain from the visitor centre. And that would be through walks, through pre-booked guides or other means, but it wouldn't be an open door where people could come up and leave the visitor centre and access onto the mountain. I think that had been common knowledge for a period of time.
I would say if the National Trust didn't know that, that's concerning, and there's a breakdown of communication. So perhaps the National Trust can just clarify tonight. They were under the impression that it would be a free for all once visitors get to the top of Thompson Quarry.
Heather, would you like to respond? Roger.
I think part of our working assumption is that the gateway to the Mourns would would open the moorings for the general public, which, you know, in itself is a great aspiration to have. When you know that the carry capacity is perhaps exceeded at the minute, even the fact of having such a beautiful building, such a beautiful construction, would attract people, whether or not even they're going into the gondola. The very fact that you would be advertising it, which of course you would, as an attraction, it almost follows through that there, you know, you will have more people. And regardless of the management plan that you would have, and it could be a great management plan, our assessment was that, you know, when people get out on the mountain, they will do what everybody loves to do on the mountain, which is explore. And the areas at the minute have exceeded their carry capacity. And if I could just answer sort of one other point in terms of working together in the future, I think that's, you know, great to do that. The lessons learned from my perspective on this is that such a heavily designated area, for a conservation charity as the custodian, that you have to start with the environment first and then consider what you can do with that environment, what the project is. The real challenge here is that, you know, I appreciate it wasn't long until the EIA would be produced. You know, that is a multitude of years after we initially started talking about it. And these things are complex. You know, you don't know exactly what you're doing on EIA for until the scheme is developed. But during that period, research that we had internally was absolutely clear. The mountain had exceeded its carry capacity.
Thank you very much. Pleasure. Okay. Any other questions online, sir? Okay, thank you very much, folks. Thank you very much. Any other questions from the floor? Nope. Thank you, everybody, for attending this evening. Thank you to the National Trust. Thank you to my fellow elected members. Everybody safe home.